नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जया मुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 7 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड लॉर्ड कृष्णा इंस्ट्रक्ट्स उद्धव टेक्स्ट 14। सो प्लीज रिपीट आफ्टर मी। श्री उद्धव उवाच योगेश योग विन्यास योगात्मन योग संभव निश्चय स मे प्रोक्त त्याग संन्यास लक्षण। श्री उद्धव उवाच योगेश योग विन्यास योगात्मन योग संभव निश्चयसाय मे प्रोक्तस् त्याग संन्यास लक्षण। श्री उद्धव उवाच योगेश योग विन्यास योगात्मन योग संभव निश्चय साय मे प्रोक्तस् त्याग संन्यास लक्षण। योगेश योग विन्यास निश्चय साय मे प्रोक्त त्याग संन्यास लक्षण। योगेश योग विन्यास योगात्म योग त्याग संन्यास लक्षण। योगात्मन योग संभव निश्चयसाय मे प्रोक्तास् त्याग संन्यास लक्षण। माताजी योगेश योग विन्यास योगात्मन योग संभव निश्चयसाय मे प्रोक्तास् त्याग संन्यास लक्षण। श्री उद्धव उवाच श्री उद्धव सेड योग ईशर ओ गिवर ऑफ ऑल रिजल्ट्स ऑफ योगा योग विन्यास ओ यू हु बाय योर ओन पावर बिस्टो योगा even upon those who are unqualified. Yoga Atman, O Supreme Soul, realized through Yoga. Yoga Sambhava, O origin of all mystic power, Nishreya Saya, for the ultimate benefit, may of me, Prokta, you have spoken about Tyaga, renunciation, Sannyas, by the acceptance of the order of Sannyas, Lakshana, characterized. Translation and purport by the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Shri Uddhava said, My dear Lord, you alone award the results of yoga practice, and you are so kind that by your own influence, you distribute the perfection of yoga to your devotee. Thus, you are the supreme soul who is realized through yoga, and it is you who are the origin of all mystic power. For my supreme benefit, you have explained the procedure for giving up the material world through the process of sannyas or renunciation. Purport. The word yogesh here indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead awards the results of all yoga practices. Since all of the material and spiritual worlds emanate from the transcendental body of Krishna, there is nothing to be achieved by any yoga practice except Krishna and His potencies. And since the Lord remains eternally the master of His potencies, no one can achieve anything through yoga or any other spiritual or material process except by the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word yoga means linking up. And unless we link ourselves with the Absolute Truth, we remain covered by the darkness of ignorance. Thus, Krishna is the goal of yoga. In the material world, we falsely try to link ourselves with the objects of the senses. Man wants to link with woman and woman with man, or one tries to link up with nationalism, socialism, capitalism, or innumerable other creations of the illusory energy of the Lord. Since we are linking ourselves to temporary objects, the relationships are temporary, the results are temporary, and at the time of death, we become bewildered when all of our connections are suddenly cut off by Maya. If we link ourselves to Krishna, however, our relationship with Him will continue even after death. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, the relationship with Krishna that we develop in this life will continue to increase in our next life, until we achieve the supreme goal of entering Krishna's planet. Those who sincerely serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following the transcendental lifestyle prescribed by the Lord, will enter the Lord's abode at the end of this lifetime. One can never achieve a permanent situation by menial speculation, and what to speak of by ordinary material sense gratification. By the methods of Hatha Yoga, Karma Yoga, Raja Yoga, Jnana Yoga, etc., one does not actually awaken his propensity for rendering eternal loving service to the Personality of Godhead. Thus, one is bereft of the transcendental tasks, tastes of spiritual enjoyment. Sometimes, the conditioned soul, disgusted by his failure to gratify his senses, bitterly decides to renounce the material world and merge into an impersonal, painless transcendence. But our actual happy situation is to render loving service at the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. All of the different yoga processes gradually lead one to love of Godhead, and it is Lord Krishna's aim to re-establish the conditioned souls in this happy position. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is making this perfection easily available through the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, the supreme yoga process for this age. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivan Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So it's Krishna's arrangement that Radha Gopinath Mandir, this is the yoga season and we have many verses on yoga. Great yogi here. So actually yoga is very much popularized in the West, as we all know. And now it's also getting repopularized in India. But it was never, there was never any view of showing the perfection of yoga. That was never taught. It was always some aspects of yoga until really Srila Prabhupada went to the West. But we see here in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna actually shows the, teaches Arjuna the perfection of yoga. And what is remarkable is that it is on the battlefield. You know, this is the last, environment one would think where yoga discussion could be taken place. And nothing happens by accident. So Krishna's purpose was really through Arjuna to teach all of us that what was for Arjuna the literal battlefield of Kurukshetra, wherein he had to face the all the armies, his and all his relatives, uncles, his very close friends on the other side. It was very painful for him. He got sentimental and he was saying, why should I fight? I want to give up. And then of course Krishna, in just 1 hour of the discourse on the Bhagavad Gita, completely changes Arjuna's mind. And then Arjuna becomes determined to fight, and he does fight. So his battlefield was there on the at Kurukshetra. But the example to us is that we have our own battlefields. And that is why it is really appropriate that this is the right setting. But though Krishna, though Arjuna accepted and completely surrendered to Krishna, but during the discourse, during the discussion, he does say that, you know, the meditational form of yoga is something which is not easy to follow. And that is, in fact, he says, I cannot follow it. Because, meditation yoga, form of yoga basically makes one focus on the super soul, on the super soul. And the, sitting in a straight position, straight back, half-closed eyes, concentrating only on the tip of the nose, being secluded place, being alone. It's very, very difficult in today's day and age. We must always remember that we are in a material circumstance. And in a material circumstance, our mind is always agitated. Constantly. And that is because we are constantly trying to seek, a solution to the current problems. And it's all through the mind, The mind, we are depending so much on the mind. We think that by changing our situation, we would be able to overcome our present problem And if I only do this, if I do that, and the mind tells us, do this, do that, go here, go there, it just leads us on. So we feel that I just reach a certain point and then my problem would be solved. Eventually, if the problem does get solved, but then something else will come. That is the nature of this world, that there will never be a freedom from anxiety. This is not so that to go to from Kunta to Vaikunta. Kunta means anxiety, and Vaikunta means without anxiety. Is the process of yoga, the process of following Krishna's instructions through the Bhagavad Gita, and that is precisely why he has spoken this to Arjun to tell us. So we have to understand first that our dilemma is our own creation, because we are depending entirely on our mind. And also to understand that this universe is so designed that we will never find a solution in that way. I remember reading many years ago, probably 40 years ago, 30, 40 years ago, that, you know, some of the most remarkable people and personalities of the last century, very brilliant, very creative, and they had actually embalmed their body. After they had instructed that after we die, they had so much faith in science, thinking that, and they've been given promises that, you know, we will find a solution to immortality, that the body will not die. So they had actually willed it that after they die, they should not be cremated or buried, but it was embalmed and kept in a freezer, I guess, just to preserve it for several decades, because thinking that as and when the solution is found, then they could come back to life. Now, these were not just crazy, ordinary people. I mean, in one sense, they're crazy, but in the way we look at it, they were actually very brilliant people. And very creative, highly successful. And I was completely amazed as to maybe there's something in it. This was before we came in touch with Vaishnavism. Because, see, this is how we get influenced, that maybe there's a solution to it. So, that's an example of how the mind really gets us to think that we can do everything. But Arjun is telling us that controlling the mind is more difficult than the wind. So, Prabhupada gives the example of like an analogy of how a man, you know, when the hurricane is coming and he stands with his arms raised, you know, spread to try to stop the wind. So, the scene may seem ridiculous. The wind is coming at 200 kilometers an hour, which blows away cars and blows away houses at times, and a person stands there. So, what is the chance? So, it is that difficult. So then do we conclude that Arjun is not qualified? But if we see Arjun's qualifications, it is beyond our imagination, beyond our understanding, realm of understanding of what Arjun's qualifications were basically. I mean, he was to be one of the closest friends and associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is enough. But apart from that, he was the best archer and the best warrior in the entire planet, among all great warriors. The competition was pretty high. It was not that just one person stood out. A tremendous administrator. And what intelligence. In 1 hour, he heard the Bhagavad Gita and completely changed his mind. He didn't have to ask questions. We are going through an entire lifetime. Perhaps we may read it. At best, we may perhaps understand mentally. And then, if you are very, very sincere, we may actually go from the mind to the heart and try to understand it. And that takes a lifetime, or many lifetimes. And here we see one person. So this is the level. So his qualifications are impeccable. And at that level of qualification, when he says that the mind cannot be controlled, one has to sit up and think that, yes, I think there is something to it. You know, why is he saying this? And that too, he is admitting it. It is for a person who is beyond our imagination successful, and for him to say that I'm helpless, means that this era, this time is thousands of times degraded than that era. We're in the Kali Yuga, already gone 5,000 years. So that doesn't mean that the mind can't be controlled. But then that's where Bhagavad Gita and then the Acharyas tell us that yes, the mind can be controlled by Krishna consciousness. That is why Prabhupada concentrated, insisted on keeping the name International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Imagine the heading of an entire organization which he had perceived to be a world organization 50 years ago, when nobody could see beyond just a bunch of 8 or 10 young boys who were boys and girls who were just completely green behind the ears, wet behind the ears. And here Prabhupada was envisioning that. But he insisted on the name, Krishna Consciousness, because everything in those two words, it captures everything. Consciousness of Krishna, that's it. But what it actually means, then Prabhupada spent 12 years and then his disciples are spreading, going on for the last 40, 50 years, and then it will go on. That's the process. So, yes, it can be done by consciousness of Krishna. And actually, it is supported by the Bhagavatam also. In the 12th canto, Sukhdev Goswami Maharaj tells Parikshit, Maharaj Parikshit, that according to the yugas, like in the Satya Yuga, the golden age, you know, they used to live till 100,000 years, and then they could achieve perfection through this process of meditation. Then in the Treta Yuga, they could live up to 10,000 years individually, and they could achieve by temple worship, by fire sacrifices. And then in the Dwapar Yuga, they could live up to 1,000 years, and they could achieve perfection through temple worship, deity worship. And here in the Kali Yuga, what is recommended, because of our limitations and the degradation of this society, that the chanting of the holy name has been strongly recommended for achieving the consciousness of Krishna, which should be the perfection of our lives. And Bhagavad Gita also tells us that the actual yogi really is one who is actually surrendered, fully surrendered to me. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that real yogi is one who actually surrenders to me. So these are confirmations of what path there is. Of course, Bhagavad Gita shows us all the paths. There is karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga. But then they are like, as an analogy, you can say that like a staircase. You know, there is somebody could be on the first step, on the 10th step, on the 50th step, on the top of the stairs. So it's so all the services lead to the Supreme Lord, but it's a level of elevation. Difference is only on elevation. So similarly here, it is not that the paths don't eventually lead, but the considering the limitations of this age, what is recommended under the circumstances today, and that is by the highest authority, by Krishna himself, is that chanting of the holy names would be the most easiest and the most appropriate. So Krishna also tells Arjuna that, you know, there is no difference between renunciation and yoga. Why? Because without sense control, without being able to take austerities, without able to live this, accept this level of following Krishna, we don't have any, we don't have a chance. So eventually, even as a yogi, we would need to follow that. It's not just a matter of doing some postures, it's a matter of following a process which would lead to Krishna. Yoga means linking up, going up to Krishna. So either way, and if you are following that, then there is no difference, because renunciation also is in yoga. Renunciation also is in somebody who takes has become a sannyasi. So either way, the whole process is really of purification. Only when we are purified, this purification process is the process of how we go through the ups and downs, the challenges that await us, and without giving up and continue the struggle. And eventually we will come to a stage when we would be having the realization that we are pure spirit soul. So from going from the mental to the realization level, that's the process of Krishna consciousness. And then that process is something which we know that at the end of it, when activities are based on the realization, complete realization that we are only spirit soul, then we would have led the perfection of life. And the best part is that Krishna is very reassuring, because he says that even if you are unsuccessful, there is nothing to lose. We have everything to gain. So this is the difference between material and spiritual life. Because in material life, what you see in this life, what you leave behind is gone. In the spiritual life, you have credits which go beyond into the next life. And any gain that you make, even if you have a fall down, but if you have gained even 1% by a sincere effort at that time, will really mean that we will not come back to the material, we will not fall down to the material world. Eventually we will go up to Krishna, if we have sincerely followed. Krishna will take us through a process where we will have to suffer for whatever our problems have been, our challenges have been. But eventually he guarantees that he'll take us back. So it's a very encouraging answer that we will never fall down if we sincerely take to Krishna consciousness. But this process is, of course, just like Krishna had told Arjun that on the right in front of the battlefield, on the battlefield in front of the two armies, that this is a war. We also have a war which is really that Maya is trying to entrap us. And then the thing is, the complexity is that the more we turn towards spirituality to counter this, the more the challenges will come. So the challenges are initially, it is like there are these games also when, you know, they put some different bars, you know, level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4. So you may be a beginner and you think you've won the first level, then you go to the next level and then the challenge goes up higher, designed that way. So Krishna has designed it that way, that for individuals, for every conditioned soul, when you turn towards... So knowing this, the knowledge is in knowing that accepting the challenges really are a process. Merely being complacent and stopping our efforts will definitely make us go down. So we should not be despondent when challenges come, because knowing that actually the Maya is giving us larger challenges, a sterner test, only because we have come to a level where Krishna feels that we can take it. And Krishna never gives us more tests than what we can bear. So that faith we need to have. And then we have to carry on. And we have so many examples great personalities who have had these challenges and had temporary problems and gone forward. Just one example of Vishwamitra Muni, who was such an exalted soul. But when Indra sends Menaka to trap him and then he had a temporary fall down, he didn't give up the process. He continued. He took the process up and it was a faltering step, but picked himself up and carried on. So this is really where we have to take take heart that if having a setback, if our focus is really on to the final goal, then that steadiness is really needed. Consistency and steadiness is very critical for us. So it's encouraging to know that there's no loss, even if you have, setbacks, but if you take into the process, we are guaranteed that the conditioned soul will actually, having attempted to come to Krishna, will be promoted to the higher planets. The longevity of life, the duration, the quality of life, you know, the comforts, everything is so much, much more. People are more godly, more religious. It's a much, much better environment. Of course, it is not permanent. When the fruits of our gains are over, then eventually we have to come down. But even when you come down, then we are also given the opportunity to be... to that soul will be given opportunity to be born in a pious family or a conducive environment to have a better opportunity to carry on. So in that sense, they are very fortunate. And in that sense, we are all very fortunate, because somehow we have been given an opportunity without us knowing how, when, in our bewildered state, you know, somebody has taken us, you know, we are completely groggy and someone just puts us in front of, the right place. It's like that. We don't know, and then suddenly we find ourselves that, I didn't expect it, but now I'm right here. So that's really our situation. So having been there, having been given this opportunity now, and with the knowledge that what is the process, then we have to really take this process, Krishna says, and go back to Godhead. So, knowing that we have had both by our pious activities, definitely from pious activities and by the causeless mercy of the Lord, special mercy, we have been given this opportunity. Having given this opportunity, now not going ahead, is much worse than not knowing at all. Because after having been given the most confidential of all secrets, it becomes our duty, in fact. And it also happens to be our salvation, it happens to be our joy. So everything coincides. But as a minimum, even if we take it, it is our duty to actually lift ourselves and go forward. Because this is a sign that if we have been given this environment, that Krishna actually wants us to go further up. And that's where we understand the reciprocation with Krishna. That if we are in this condition today, we may be looking at just our condition and seeing that I have this problem today, I have that problem today, I have this problem, this. If we keep ourselves, if we allow our mind to just concentrate only on our problems, which means we are so concerned about our own selves, which means we are being so self-centered and so selfish that we are completely ignorant and we've totally closed down on whatever we have been given. Having been given this understanding, we have to pull ourselves out to at least, even if our mind goes into that at some point in time, whether we are sitting in class, whether we are hearing, or whether we get this thought at some point, Krishna will, if we want, then Krishna will give us. He is knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So he can easily bring that thought to our minds. That yes, I was in this mind. This is actually I've been wallowing in this kind of self pity and where I am this, I'm pulled down and everything is upon me and such a my problem is this, my problem is that, my problem is this. And when Krishna will give us the intelligence to really look from above and then look at and see that it's my mind taking me there. And this is what I need to do. I have to push myself to do it. I have to find that determination to do it. And then we would go to that path. So yeah. So this problem will be constant duration entire through our whole life. Pulling us this way, that way, this way, that way. So that's our battle. That's the struggle we are talking of. Krishna, through Arjuna, is telling us, this battle is what we have to stand up and fight. And he's giving us so much reassurances that even in this battle, we may temporarily succumb and have this problem, but we'll lift ourselves up. That's what he sees. He's seeing the effort to get up. The struggle is what he sees. He doesn't, he knows the end result anyway. So we should also know that, we read in the scriptures that every person has his own prescribed duties. And those who have actually given up their prescribed duties and actually tried to take to Krishna consciousness in a full attempt and had a setback, they're in a better position than someone who will be following his prescribed duties, occupation duties very well, but has nothing to do with Krishna. This is one thing we have to have complete clarity, because our judgment of people, our judgment of what is success and failure is based so much on external activities. And we may see that this devotee, he could have done so much more if he had really given more attention to his work, his occupation. He could have risen in the ranks and he could have earned this much, he could have earned that much. We are allowing ourselves to look at, so those opinions don't count. When we come to this process of Krishna consciousness, we have to first accept whose opinion counts. If we are going to go by the opinion of the world at large, then it is a sign that we want to give up this knowledge completely. That is the thing. So this doesn't mean that we have to give up our occupation. This doesn't mean that we should be lax also, because that is it's another way, it's a sense gratification. If you just come running to the temple or to avoid a problem, then that is not really that means avoiding the problem is your priority, not taking Krishna's blessings and praying to him to give you gratitude and so on. So really we have to understand our mind. So that's not what we are prescribing. But at the same time, a person who is sincerely trying, and it's not that failures don't come to those who are continuing to do their duty. The whole world is there. I mean, how many people may be materially successful? Relatively very, very few compared to the people who have been materially unsuccessful. So those who are unsuccessful doesn't mean that they are all Krishna conscious, and those who are successful doesn't mean that they are not taking Krishna. So that is part of our life, whatever Krishna has given. Issue is about our putting effort in whatever we do. So in occupation also we do it, but the material has to support the spiritual. What is more important is the spiritual. We have two levels and we understand. So we have to continue our life and do the best we can. We have to do really, we have to think constantly, but we do it in an environment which is conducive to Krishna consciousness, and that has to always remain. If we slowly, gradually, you know, close that down or reduce it and justify it, then that's a very warning signal for us. So we always have two choices for our duties. You know, we can serve the illusion, that is, we'll be deluded by Maya, or we can serve the reality, that is, attachment to Krishna. But the common thing is that we will always be serving. The thing is that we have to understand that even if we don't come to Krishna, or if we want to, if somebody is an atheist, somebody is very anti-religion or has very strong views, he's not the master. He is just a bigger fool thinking that he is controlling things, but actually he's also serving his senses and eventually getting more and more trapped. So serving is our constitutional position. To serve is our constitutional position, but it's a question of choice. Which service we do? We serve the Lord or through a process of Krishna consciousness, or we serve, that is the reality, or we serve the illusion. And that illusion is that we are continuing to be completely living a life devoid of anything to do with the Creator. Because the issue is, because sometimes we see people, you know, they're honest persons, they're selfless also. They may do some very nice philanthropy work, help people. But if they don't believe in Krishna, or don't accept at all, they may be atheists, then it is ultimately, who's the doer? If we do not accept, the final question is this, who's the doer? Is it Krishna who's the doer, or I am the doer? There has to be someone who's the doer. Doer of all the activities, doer of our success, or controlling, that means I am the final authority, I am the controller, I will decide finally, and there's nothing beyond that. That is where the question comes. So if I am doing it with that consciousness, eventually we will have that pride, or we'll become proud of it, or at least we'll be having expectations. Because I am doing it, so I am expecting that it'll happen this way. Because there is no question of saying that, well, I have to accept that there's a higher authority. So not having an authority, this is a dilemma. So therefore, ultimately, accepting Krishna and then doing whatever duties we are, is really necessary. Now, in this, if you study the Ramayana, because we don't have time for, but just a few examples of how from the Ramayana we can also see, when we talk of serving the illusion, then that means we are, because Ravan represents that. You know, Ravan is completely devoid of Krishna consciousness. So if you take Marichi's role, you know, when Marichi comes as a golden deer and Sitaji gets seemingly very attracted to the deer and asks Lord Ram to go and capture, and that's actually Marich the demon. So we can understand that this attachment, of course, Sitaji is the goddess of fortune, she is the expansion of the Lord, so it is for us to understand the lessons from there. But the lesson is that we can get, the attachments can create traps. And these traps, exactly how when we get too attached to something, then Krishna will, like in here it came in the form of Marich. And then eventually that led to, going to such a situation where we were unprotected and then we are trapped by Ravan. So, therefore we should see through the eyes of the scriptures and see the substance also in that way. And we, how a spider's web is very attractive to the fly. But the minute the fly goes in, it gets trapped. So, the first thing is that these attachments can be a trap for us. Another example is what can create illusions for us is the power of bad association. And really we cannot understand, underestimate how challenging that is. Kaikai had so much love for Lord Ram that is described that she loved Ram more than her own son Bharat. It is, and then that same Kaikeyi eventually asked for those two boons because of Mantra's association. So for us also, this association can be, it may not be in that gross, grotesque form of Mantra, if you're looking for that, that it is not there, so I am not, no, it will be very subtle. And that anything that represents, which takes us away from Krishna consciousness, really is bad association. The intensities may differ. But eventually, there are those which are going against the current, goes with the flowing with the current of taking us to Krishna. So this is we have to use our intelligence to understand that. And if we have any doubts, we should always. That's why we are told that we should have close friends, mentors, people whom we can discuss with. After we hear, if we have any doubts, that am I? This analysis is difficult for us to make, though we have to always try to see where we are. But others can help us. So if we keep that open mind, then we know that what association I'm getting. Am I getting too trapped? Somebody might say, I don't need to work because that work environment is very difficult. Yes, work environment is challenging, of course. But here the question is, when we talk of association, it's a matter of intimacy. It's a matter of closeness. See, we can have different levels of, that way we know so many people in the world. Many school friends also meet us. Many college friends will meet us. Many old friends will meet us. It's not that we get influenced by them. So keeping contact, keeping good relationship is a good social behavior. We should do that. But if we allow our views to be influenced by others, if we are so much in admiration that we get, that becomes our focus of our goal, then that is really when we talk of association which is pulling us. And if it's a negative association, then that becomes a challenge. So the question is of where we give our heart, where we give our mind and intelligence. So if we just come through, we bring our body here to Radha Gopinath Mandir and we love the deities and love the decor and the attraction and look and the ambience of the temple, even we find some peace. But we go back and don't make changes in our life. If we allow ourselves to be still influenced by other factors and they become more important, then we are not really coming to the temple or getting the association the right way. So association is not necessarily physical. Association is really ultimately surrender. So where are we really taking that? So here in Kaikeyi's case, she became so surrendered virtually to mantra that that influence completely changed her mind. A third point about illusion is that arrogance cannot understand well-wishers. When we are arrogant, we cannot see or cannot understand who our well-wishers are. And we see this that in the case of Ravan, who is really the, you know, he set the highest bar for arrogance. I think very difficult to come to that level. But see the how, and you know, we shouldn't underestimate his material intelligence. He knew the Vedas absolutely in and out. He could recite, and he had powers of memory, the kind of renunciation he went through, the boldness and courage that he had. I mean, there were these attributes were all there with him. It is just a small issue about he went to the, he just took a diversion. Instead of going here, he went the other way. But he had those attributes. You see, we have to understand that this world is a mirror of our own consciousness. So, basically the way, whatever we are conscious of, we see that. And we look at everything in that way. So in the case of Ravan, because of his arrogance, he, for instance, he his own well-wisher wife, Mandodari, was a very great personality actually, that she not only tolerated him, but she was loyal to him and supported him. One can't, it's difficult to imagine how you can, I mean, she saw it as a duty to protect him and she tried to give good advice. But he was thinking that she is jealous of Sita, she is envious of Sita. And that is her. Well, actually, the truth was that he was envious of Ram. So what happens is that in that arrogance, you look at, you know, it's a mirror of own conscience. So we are thinking that we are completely right. And in that arrogance, because arrogance means that we are supreme. We are so proud of our thought and ourselves that we cannot see any other view and cannot hear any other thought, any other voice. So in that thought, Ravan is looking at it as if, he's actually believing that Mandodari is jealous, envious of Sita when she is advising, you know, that give up Sita, send it. Why do you want to keep, you know, you're creating, practically destroying the whole kingdom if you do this, etc. also Ravan felt that Vibhishan was very disloyal to him. Actually, he was disloyal to his own cousin, Kuber. But because his own consciousness was such that he was looking at any act who opposed him as being disloyal, because he considered himself the supreme. So this is another issue of illusion where, you know, when we, if we become arrogant or proud, and we should not underestimate our ability to become arrogant. We have many weaknesses, but this is one of those where we would be unpleasantly surprised how much we can be, that we can be. So in such a situation, the great danger is that even well-wishers will not be able to help us, because, and sometimes we see obvious things when we hear Ramayana and Mahabharata and Bhagavatam stories, and we say, how can it be? How can Duryodhan act like this? How can, I mean, Krishna's there in front of him. But one can say that Krishna is there in your hands. Krishna, you are speaking Hare Krishna mantra. He is there. He is supposed to be dancing on your tongue. He is right there. And you, what about you? So we are in that sense, we are in the same situation that we are not able to see him. And also, that pride or attachment, you know, can lead to loss of intelligence. Again, we see in case of Ravan, you know, he was very powerful. But when the war started, one by one, all his greatest generals, and each general was enormously powerful. I mean, really, if we study the imbalance that was there on paper between Ravan's army and Lord Ram's army, it is really, even David and Goliath would look like an optimistic situation. Because this was, there was no armament, these people had just boulders and rocks. And here, they had not just weapons, but the strength, the ability, the kind of cunning they had, the experience they had, also many of the shastras, astras, everything they had, they used it. And so many of them had conquered many demigods. It was not just Ravan and his son. So with that kind of success, you know, there was an imbalance. And yet, when it came to the war started and one by one these generals started dying, his intelligence was lost. He just still couldn't accept that he's vulnerable. He thought, I am now going ahead, there is no problem. I will be able to do it. You know, the mind keeps jumping to some, clutching at straws, going to this solution, that solution, do this, do that. So then his own son died, Indrajit went, which was a shock to him for a moment, but even then, and even his Kumbhakarna and all, so he couldn't understand that and still thought he'll do it on his own. Yeah, so that was his pride and arrogance. And so these are, when we talk of not accepting, I mean, serving the illusion, as we say, serving not the reality, and we accept that, then these consequences are there, and this is this may be there in part in our lives. So the desire to serve is there in all our hearts. It's a question of where we serve. And ultimately, we have to see that accept that the results are in Krishna's hands, and we have to leave it to him. There is a very nice story about Lord Indra. Is a great demigod, but he keeps coming. He keeps volunteering himself practically through the Bhagavatam as you know, examples of pride, arrogance, and temporary problems. So. Once when the demigods were Bhaumasura was really practically annihilating them with his power, then all the demigods and Indra went to Krishna and again, gave their story that, you know, we are going to be finished. So Krishna went with, he took his wife Satyabhama, he went and Bhaumasura sent all his soldiers there. One by one, everybody was killed, Bhaumasura was killed, and Bhaumasura had stolen Aditi, the mother of the demigods, his earrings, among other things. So he killed all Bhaumasura and everybody, and then Krishna actually returned the earrings. No, he returned the earrings also. He went to all the way to Indra's abode to give. Supreme Personality of Godhead has gone there. No, that's such a nice gesture. Indra was very happy, very humble. All the demigods were thanking him a lot. On the way back, then Lord Krishna was, because this Parijat flower was very attractive to Satyabhama, and she wanted, so Krishna actually took a tree from there and wanted to plant it back in Dwarka. So that Indra and the demigods became so angry and so irritated and upset. How can Parijat flower, which is so spread, it can only grow in the heavens. How can it go down to this measly earthly planet? And not knowing, again we say, how is it possible? I mean, just some time ago Krishna came and did all this and how he couldn't see. But this, when you are, you can get blinded by arrogance, blinded by, and if you don't have the association to, you know, because we have seen in the other story that Indra also did not listen to his Guru Maharaj at another occasion. So he got temporarily completely blinded, and then of course Krishna had to straighten things out, and then they were all very apologetic. But we can take from the example that even very godly people, people who accept the supremacy of the Lord, can succumb, and who are in a much, much, much higher level than we could imagine, can also succumb. So these are all realities. It is not just a story which is, they're all meant for us to understand the challenges that we have if we don't really seriously take the process. Because when we take the process seriously, then all this, not that we will not have problems, but the minute we have problems or at some time, we will get good advice if we are in seeking for it. We'll also, Krishna will give us the intelligence to ask the right questions, to go to the right people, to pick ourselves up. So that is ultimately, that's our desire. So that's the difference. That's where we say that is everything automatic. Finally, the choice is ours, what we want to do. That minute independence can tell us how we want to go ahead. So our duty is to really complete this process of Krishna consciousness. And the key takeaway is that no relationship in this material world, whether, you know, husband, wife, or the spouse, or parents, children, you know, lovers, friends, are actually eternal or actual. Because they are all a reflection of the relationship with Krishna. So if we see that, then we will, and because then slowly we'll be able to see Krishna in all our relationships. And through that, we will actually respect the relationships that we have with the people around us, whether it's parents, children, the immediate family, the spouses, others, because then our weaknesses will be somewhat, you can say, straitjacketed by this overwhelming understanding that Krishna is the, finally, he's with them also. Krishna is in them. Krishna is, I hate this person, but Krishna, no, Krishna is also in him. And, so as much as in him as in me, so, you know, we will be looking at our, reviewing our relationships if we really see Krishna in everything. And when we, and Krishna's reciprocation is immeasurably more than our, whatever services we may do, he can do enormously more. I mean, beyond our imagination, there's no limit, in fact, to what, you know, what his remuneration, what his rewards can be. And there are some very nice stories. One which I heard from Giriraj, I'd read from Giriraj Maharaj, His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, many years ago, maybe 12, 13 years ago. And he was talking about this event which happened in, I think it was during Prabhupada's time, but certainly when he was a brahmachari. And he was in France distributing books. So he tells a story about this young girl, a French girl, very petite, very demure, you know, very delicate, a very sincere devotee girl, a young girl. And this was the marathon time. And as you, all of you probably know that the marathon is defined as that Christmas month or the month of December, where everybody really goes out, all out for book distribution. So this girl, they used to send many people to the stations. Many devotees go to the railway stations because, you know, people, first of all, they had found success when before the trains would go, passengers would be waiting there 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then they have an opportunity, and then when the trains start moving, then they go off the train. So this girl went in into a compartment, and there this one person was there, suited and all that, was sitting there. So she had the Krishna book, and she tried to, she showed him the Krishna book. So this person, this man, about in his 40s, early 40s, he just took the book, He got up and he was very strong, so he practically tore it, almost tore it in half, threw it down, and he stomped it, you know, and he crushed it with his feet. So this girl was, she just burst into tears, you know, just seeing this. Not only that, but he actually, you know, dragged her by her hair and through the compartment and threw her out of the train. And the train had just started moving. So she dislocated her shoulder. She fell on her face, you know, bruised. Blood was coming out of her hair, you know, onto her neck. Probably she had a fracture in one or two parts. So Giriraj Maharaj was somewhere nearby, not too far. So they were in the other parts. So they came running there and they were all cursing this demoniac mentality of this person. And then they had to carry this girl to the temple. But because of the marathon month, she was back on the streets within 5 days. 4 or 5 days she was on the street. Now it so happened that this man, he was a very wealthy banker. So he had come to business to Paris, and he was going back to Madrid in Spain. So he basically was Spanish. So when he went back, he showed this practically torn book, you know, to his wife. You know, it was like as a joke, and he told her that, you know, wanted to. He told the story of you know, these beggars. They come, they have nothing to do. They just come and you know, and this is the way I treated her, and I had to straighten her out, and so on and so forth. And then he went to work, his wife went shopping, and then the maid came. So the maid saw the book, so she thought that this book is, you know, it's practically torn. So she just patched it up and then put it back in the library. They had a room just for the library. So, and then that's where it remained. Now about a year later, this banker's wife, she died suddenly, very young, and she had a head-on collision in the car and she was dead. He was completely devastated because he was quite attached to his wife. Not only that, his son ran away and his daughter married some low-class person. So all this happened at one time. So he was very depressed. He was practically, he was contemplating suicide actually. He was going through a horrible time. And at that time he was looking for the Bible actually. But he was actually seriously thinking of suicide. And then when he looked up, he saw this book, which was there since more than a year. The maid had put there by Krishna's arrangement. So he took the book and then he read that, he was reading through that. He read the part where Vasudeva is preaching to Kans about reincarnation, you know, that philosophical part. So he was intrigued. So he didn't go too much into detail, but he read enough for him to at least stop his thought of suicide. Because he, you know, he said that, okay, my wife is not in a horrible situation, though she died, but actually she is not, you know, it at least mentally resounded with him that she's, this reincarnation theory appealed to him. So he went to sleep. Somehow the next day he was attracted to again go through the book. So, and then for the next 3 days he didn't go to work. He just read the book over the next 3 days. And that had a major influence on him, changed him completely. And he was so overwhelmed, you know, by what he read. He was also then feeling extremely bad at what he had done. But he didn't know what was at that time. He had no idea beyond this book. So then, though he was Spanish, he knew French. So he saw the book at the end of the book, and he saw the address of the Paris temple. He called there. Then they told him that, well, there's a temple in Madrid. So he went to the Madrid temple in Spain and he rang the bell, and the temple president was relatively new. So he opened the door and suddenly he finds that this one very wealthy banker, you know, in a suit and all that, he's on his hands and knees, you know, and he's crying and, you know, he's saying, please forgive me, please forgive me. So this president thought this guy is mad, you know, because what is he doing suddenly? He must be under drugs or something. So he told him, anyway, sir, if you want to speak something, you want to come inside. So he came in and then he told him, you know, okay, what had happened and what had I said. How I have, you know, I have offended, you know, this book and this very nice, sincere girl who was trying to actually help me, and this is what I did and all. So what should I do? So the president was new and he was completely, he was lost for words. He couldn't say anything. He didn't know what to say. So anyway, so this Madrid, this banker, he took out a checkbook and gave a very large amount of money and he went. But that doesn't end there because that was on a Wednesday. On Sunday when the president was giving the class, this banker came and he was sitting at the back of the class. And every Sunday he was coming for the afternoon class. And he became so interested that one day he came and he said, I want to join the temple. So they were very happy because, but they were also very, a little unnerved because they've never had such a wealthy banker come there, you know. And it's a small temple because a small, Spain is a small country in Europe. So he come, when he came and he, so they promptly gave him the service of treasurer, being a banker. So it was probably natural. So he was faithfully doing it. And then the marathon was approaching, so he said, I want to distribute books. So he said, so they allowed him, no? They were a little apprehensive. They said, okay, go ahead. And he actually did quite well. So then he liked it so much, then he said, I don't want to be treasurer. So he became only the book distributor constantly. And he was very much attracted to that. And then they had a big festival for book distributors in Italy. So he went there the following year. And then he met this girl there. So, you know, he was weeping and crying and he was saying, I'm so sorry. I'm just so sorry what I've done. You know, so of course Vaishnavas are so forgiving. So she said, no, it's all right. No. So this is a, of course, apart from the, in the story we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's immeasurable mercy. And we have heard from our book distributors in charge. I mean, it's just one temple out of several hundreds of temples. One story, this every book distributor practically has so many stories. And all over the temple. So these are millions of examples of how Krishna actually demonstrates. So that is one part of it. But also on the other hand, it shows from the girl's point of view, you know, this Mataji was distributing books and how sincerely that in spite of going through such misery and difficulties, physical, mental, the humiliation, the abuse, you know, I mean, she almost lost her life. She could have been killed practically. Within 4 or 5 days, she came back on a service and then at the end of the day, she had the heart to forgive him. So we can also see that if you are serving the reality, Krishna will give us the right emotions and the right approach at situations. You know, you will not be caught up thinking that you don't become condescending, you don't become angry or don't become hateful. Because these could have been natural consequences. If she had slapped him, for instance, one would have said, well, it's natural. And maybe it's not ideal, but it would be understandable. But no, the Vaishnava qualities do come up at the time that we want. So, that is one. And of course, from the scriptures point of view also, we see in the story of Bali Maharaj. When Bali Maharaj when Vamandev, the dwarf, comes, Krishna comes in the form of Vamandev at the doorstep and he asks for this 3 steps of land. He comes as a beggar and there's a huge fire sacrifice going on and Bali Maharaj he was the king of the universe, an emperor of the universe, very powerful, also very popular, very able person. And here comes, and he was very, honorable. So, it was an honor that any Brahmin comes to the doorstep, charity has to be given. He calls this little short dwarf boy, very attractive, spellbindingly beautiful boy, Vamandev, comes in. And he asks, he tells him, take anything you want. I can give you planets, I can give you this, I can give you, you know, cities, I can give you, you know, thousands of servants, I can give you so many beautiful wives, so many things he offers. What to speak of, you know, palaces and gold and this, that. And he only says that I want 3 steps of land. And as it is, he was very short, so how much would the step be? So then Bali Maharaj's reaction was very kind of almost contemptuous, saying, what you should know what my position is and you should understand, you should know how to ask. That was the tone he was saying, that, you know, why are you asking only for this? And then response of Vamandev was, he says in those immortal words, he says, but I'm not like you. He says, I'm not like you. Then he says that if you cannot be contented with, even if you have the whole universe, but if you're not contented, you'll never get peace. And if you have nothing, and if you have peace, then you have everything. So, that is one thing we can see from Bali, from Lord Krishna himself advising in a very nice situation, directly telling us that, you know, basically, you know, when we are serving reality, we accept what we have contentment, we try to find peace within what we have, and take setbacks and successes in our stride. It is said that actually digesting success is even more difficult than digesting failures, because when you are having major setbacks, it is a natural response that, as Bhagavad Gita also says, that we generally, when distressful, we will turn to Krishna. And many of us would have come there. But when we are then successful and things happen the way we have unexpectedly or expectedly wanted, and it's gone beyond what we want, it's very, very difficult to control. But nevertheless, by the words of Vamandev, tells us that if we don't have this, then there is no value, it is no benefit. Also, we can see in the story that, see what happens then. I mean, Bali Maharaj, his own guru, was who brought him back from the dead. Bali Maharaj was killed actually, and Shukracharya actually brought him back to life. And such a guru he rejects. He had to take a split second decision. Shukracharya was telling him this, oh, he's Vishnu, he's going to, you know, he'll cover everything, finish it. He could see everything. That was the power of the guru. He rejects him and he goes ahead and offers to Vamandev. And then, if you say, at that time you say he's offered everything to Vamandev, wow, great. The first step he covered half the world, second step he covered the rest. There's nothing left. And then Vamandev, seemingly, instead of acknowledging that he's given everything, he actually chastises him, no, he humiliates him. He says, just to bring the glory of Bali Maharaj, he says, what have you, I mean, you are a failure. You gave your word, you don't have anything. Now see his position. He's completely humiliated. King of the universe at one level, completely controlled. And moments later, he is bound like a criminal in front of practically the massive audience of everybody, because it's a huge fire sacrifice, the lakhs, millions of people around, all the sages, demigods, everybody is watching. And this man is brought down to a step or level of a beggar. He's been rejected by his guru. And one would have thought that if he's gone from one side to another side, but here both the sides have kicked him. Guru Maharaj has rejected him, and here Krishna also seemingly tests him, saying that, what have you done? Nothing. You've given me with two steps, but where is the third step? So at that moment, you can say, what would he have been feeling? That I have done, what more can I do? But Krishna gives him that intelligence for him to immediately offer his life. Because he had given his power, his wealth, his influence, his family, his palaces, everything. He's now finished. He's a criminal, he's bound also, literally bound by ropes. And then he just surrenders his head. So then we see that now he's gone down to zero and then goes back to hero. Straight. Overnight, immediately. Because Krishna, you know, glorifies him and, you know, he, in fact offers him, tells him that you will go to Sutala Lok, which, and then he himself offers, he says that I will always be there as a, you know, doorkeeper. So through all this, Bali Maharaj is still the same, grateful and surrendered. Very steady through the highest success, pits of failures, so-called failure, and then again the heights of success. He has not moved at all. So we can say who's most fortunate. The demigods got what they wanted because they you know, the whole the issue started because they had lost everything. They went to Vishnu. Vishnu comes to save them. So they got everything restored. So happily ever after, so one could say. So we all consider Bali Maharaj as the most glorious, the most fortunate. And in the nine processes of devotional service, the culmination of all the processes are actually Atma Nivedanam, the last process where complete surrender. And who's the epitome of Atma Nivedanam is Bali Maharaj. For this reason, that he gave up, he was willing to give his life, surrendered everything totally. And then the Lord rewards him immeasurably. So when we talk of Lord reciprocating, this is also an extraordinary example. Also, it tells us that we should have faith. See, in this through process that we may be having, from having tasted success and we have failure, it's very difficult to not to lose faith or to, because we still have expectations. And when we have expectations hidden or open, when it does, it's not met, then it does, gets shaken. But because Bali Maharaj was who he is, he is one of the 12 Mahajans, the ones who are the repository of all the wisdom and knowledge of this world. And also Krishna shows us that whatever you offer me, you are not the loser in any way. Even if the seeming reputation is lost, people may laugh at you and there's no more humiliation example than Bali Maharaj. Even then, he was not moved because he had that faith. So if you have that kind of, if you have offered to Krishna, we will, Krishna will reward in many ways. We shouldn't expect that we'll also be given Sutala Lok and things. The way Krishna gives also, he always gives in unexpected ways. And certainly he'll give it in a way which we do not expect, for sure. So, and it may not be at our time. So if you're expecting now, guaranteed it'll be some other time. If you're not expecting now, it may come now. So it's all mysterious. Krishna's, everything about him is very mysterious. And then there's this danger of complacency, where if you have had some success, we've had steadiness. See, complacency we look at it in two ways. You know, Krishna says that fight lethargy and egoism. So lethargy, there are two ways. One is on a gross level. We may say that a person is lazy, a person is feeling, doesn't want to work, just wants to sleep. He says he's lazy. I mean, he's very lethargic and he's complacent. But the other is more dangerous. It's actually on a subtle level. And because we will disregard it. The danger is because the other one is obvious. This one is not obvious. That we may be very active, you know, and we again judge people by that. That this person is a very hard worker. He's hard working. Why? Because he's 12 hours a day he works. 6 days a week, sometimes on Sundays also, if there's a year ending or whatever he is needed, he goes there. And then apart from that, he's spending so much time for this or that. So we measure it by a person's physical occupation. We will judge a person who, we will say externally that someone is working only 3 hours a day, or let's take someone who's joined the temple. We rarely will think, at least many initially will think that nobody will use the word hard work because they're looking at only the external. Or even in the temple, if someone is doing physical labor, you can see someone is sweeping the floor, serving, see him this action, that action, this service, hard work. Even if he's doing services, and this is not to minimize the services, my point is coming, you may go for book distribution, you may go for lectures. So when we see that, saying he's really working hard. But we do not put any emphasis on hard work means when we are working hard or on the struggle, on the real struggle. If someone is chanting, whether he likes it or not, someone is reading a few hours a day, someone is meditating on that, so it may not be visible. So we don't put that as hard work. Actually, that is really hard work. When work, where there's a challenge, there's a struggle, we only go by the physical thing then, a person. So we have to be recognizing that how we judge things and how because our judgments are based on our thoughts. Our thoughts are based on our views. So the complacency, the lethargy could very well be that we may be very much occupied in very many things we do, but when it comes to spiritual life, we have no inclination at all. Sometimes we say, I don't want to chant, I will work, I'll do my best, I'll serve my family, I'll earn. Sometimes I'll take two jobs, or I'll take a job and I'm studying, doing night school, management course, this, that. So we could do it if there's a longer purpose, but if that's the only goal, and if you're doing it, as we earlier said, if you're doing our duty, it is a duty to serve our family. But if you're doing it devoid of Krishna, then it is devoid of value. That is the thing. So Krishna has to be in the center of everything because he's given our life, he's going to take our life, we will be going back. And understanding where we came from, why we are here, what we need to do and how to go back to him is primarily the goal of life. So when we take this process of chanting, when we are doing japa, ultimately we have to, as much as possible, remind ourselves that when we pray, we ask for that, we try to remember a gratitude. We feel how much we are, and there is so much. At times we are actually overwhelmed by how much grateful we should be while looking to a position. So if we understand that and knowing that the source of it finally is Krishna, and then appealing to him that please through that let me, show me the way how I can reciprocate, what I can do to help, to repay even, even a fraction of what I should. If that mood comes, then, we are having a much better chance of continuing on a steady path of Krishna consciousness. So I'll end there, and if there's a question or two, we could take that. It's probably one.
Haribol, Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Haribol.
Prabhuji, thank you so much. It was a wonderful class. I have one question regarding this Prabhuji, arrogance. How does one realize that he is arrogant? We learned that you see your reflection in the other person. I mean, whatever you said, we understood that Ravana was he was envious, so he saw envy in Mandodari and like that. Also, we learned in this episode of Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj. From point of view of Shukracharya, maybe he could have understood that Bali Maharaj is arrogant, that he is not able to, he is not listening to the well, whatever I wish for him. So how does one realize that he is arrogant and not the other person who he is talking to or he is speaking to?
So a person who, in our arrogance, we would not even actually want to understand that we are arrogant. So this question really is for those who are actually taking to the path of finding Krishna or finding a relation with Krishna, and when we are struggling and we are looking for our weaknesses. Otherwise it's very difficult when we are actually, you see that the pride is really the source of most of our problems. Pride and envy, through that everything really emanates. So if you are completely blissfully, so-called blissfully, going ahead without any kind of thought that that anyone can dislodge me where I am. However, we may have all been in the same position, going ahead where it is. But then, out of causeless mercy or out of our pious activities, situations may have been created, mostly from distress or maybe out of curiosity or so. Some event may have happened. And we get an opportunity to fleetingly examine it also. When I say fleetingly examine, it may be, we may, the first connection to a devotee, to a program, to a lecture, to a temple, it's the first glimpse we may have been given. We don't realize that that has been given, this is an opportunity given to us. But now if we've taken that opportunity and something is of interest to us, we take that further. Now we start seriously examining. So this question generally is put really when we are now wanting to see where do I stand and where do I need to change, where are my obstacles. So in that mood, it should not be so difficult, because actually a lot of activities really stem from that. Because then we would be willing to make amends. When we have made mistakes, we will be willing to take guidance. If there is a serious difference in the family, let's say, we would examine it ourselves that where is my role? What am I doing? Is it something, an apology needed from me or a correction needed from me? Or sometimes it may not be, but at least then we know how to accept it also eventually and not let that hopefully destroy the relationship. So then this microscopic examination starts taking place when we start asking the question. But till we come to that stage, it's very difficult, because we will go on, like Ravan, for instance. And we've seen many, the less fortunate ones who have not had that first chance to go on the way they are. But as we understand from the scriptures and from our acharyas, now, More than 500 million books, pieces of literature have been sold around the world just from ISKCON alone. Granted that maybe some of them may be just parked in the library, but sometimes somebody will read it. Somebody may have thrown in the garbage can and someone else picks it up. This is, we have many stories about that. So many people have read it, and we don't see the fruit, the manifestation immediately. However, rest assured that the seed has been sown. That is guaranteed. So that seed, so when it starts sprouting, it will come up in these challenges, you know, that we will be given when we slowly have the realization that, I mean, I have actually, you know, we've been continuing to feel the victim, and then we see that we may be the aggressor, you know. So those realizations will come. So at that time, when we are in that situation, we will certainly be able to rectify if we are willing to actually listen to others, if you are not clear. And many times the clarity comes to us, really speaking. We know that what my thought process was, what I was thinking. So, presumably, people in this room or those are in that process where they are already in the stage where they can, if they want to, examine where they stand and how they should go forward. It's a general question, but a general approach, but, you know, specific ones, we have to look at our own particular instance, you know, and see where we stand.
Thank you.
Right. Any other question? Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.